So Siman Kuf Pei Hei, which we're focusing on tonight, is the Siman in Shulchan Aruch where it talks about the ne'emanus, the belief that a husband has for his wife. As we know, the Torah expects that a woman is going to keep count, she's going to keep track, she's going to the mikvah on her own. Her husband is obviously not going to be watching her all the time, he's not going to be checking in all the time to make sure everything's right. You don't have to have a buddy system where somebody else is checking, so there's a certain amount of trust that a husband has for his wife when it comes to calculating her status of nida, whether she went to the mikvah or not. So this is what the siman is all about, and we begin with a very important gemara in Maseches Ksuba, Daf Ayin Beis. The problem here is, before we actually get to the gemara itself, we have the following issue. When we talk about a nida, is that considered an erva? Is that considered an arayus or not? We know that the Torah lists a whole bunch of individuals who are considered to be an erva to me. So for example, the Torah says, I'm not allowed to marry my mother. That's an arayus. What?
Temporary.
That would be gili arayus. So the difference here is, my mother is always going to be forbidden to me. My sister is always going to be forbidden to me. So all of those in that category are in some way a stationary iser. Over here you're saying we only have a temporary prohibition. So would this be considered gili arayus? On that perspective, I would say no, because it's only a temporary prohibition. It's not something that is going to last. A woman, once she stops having the flow, can go to the mikvah and then become tahor, and she's no longer a nida. So what exactly is the qualification to put something in the category of gilui arayus? And that is what is very confusing about a nida. It's somewhere in the middle. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Ishus, kol she'aser bi aser batorah. Anyone who the Torah says you're not allowed to live with, and if you go ahead and violate that aveira and you live with them, chayiv al biyaso kares, if the punishment for doing that would be kares, then the Rambam says that is considered part of the category of arayus. So 1 minute. What happens if somebody has a relation with a nida that he wasn't allowed to? What's the punishment? Kares. Oh, so according to the Rambam's definition, it should be that the same way if one lives with his mother, it's an Isser Kares, and all the other Gili Arayas, Isser Kares. So too, if one has relations with a nida, since the Torah says the prescription is that you're Chayiv Kares, that must mean that a nida is part of this category of Gili Arayas. That's what it would seem, according to the way the Rambam defines it. However, we have a Gemara Maseches Kiddushin, Samach Zayin Amud Beis, where the Gemara says that Hukshu kol ha'arayus de lo tafsi bahu kiddushin. We assume that all of the gili arayus are the same, and if one tries to get married to one of the arayus, you make a marriage ceremony and you have a ring and you do everything, kiddushin is not tofes, it's not going to work. Says the Gemara, if that's the case, ihachi afilu nida nami. What if someone meets a wonderful young woman, they want to get married, they're standing under the chuppah, it so happens, it's a chuppah snida. Happens every so often, it's unfortunate, but they get married anyway. So the Gemara says, how can that be? What do you mean? Didn't you just tell me that anyone who's in the category of arayus, if you try to get married to them, the marriage is not chal, it's not activated, it doesn't work, because we assume there's no tfisas kiddushin. And says the Gemara, no, we have exeris hakasuv, that when it comes to anida, that's an exception to the rule. So even though, generally, when you try to marry one of the gili arayus, we assume that that is going to be something that kiddushin is not going to work, nida is going to be an exception. And we assume that if someone marries a nida, that kiddushin is tofes, that does work. So you see, in that regard, it's different. In other regards, it's the same. What's the halacha? What is the byproduct if somebody marries his mother and they have a child? What is that child?
A mamzer.
A mamzer. Somebody marries a nida and has a child from the time that she was a nida. What's the halacha? That child is? What? He's a kosher. It's nothing wrong. He's not a mamzer. Okay, so the Gemara says all mystical ideas, other things, but the child is not a mamzer. So once again, you see, there's some kind of line that's drawn between all the category of arayus and the nida, on the other hand, who is considered to be in some way an outlier. So for example, the Minchas Chinuch has a very fascinating suffix. Minchas Chinuch wonders, what is the halacha? As we know, there are three averis in the Torah that we say, Yaharag Val Yavar. So if somebody comes to me and says, I want you to go kill someone else, the halacha is, I have to be willing to give up my life instead of killing somebody else. What is the halacha if somebody comes to me and says, I want you to have relationship with an erva? What's the halacha?
You have to kill yourself.
Why? Gili arayus is considered to be one of the cardinal sins, terrible thing, I have to be willing to give up my life. So now, ask the Minchas Chinuch, what's the halacha if someone comes to me and says, I want you to go have a relationship with a woman who's a nida?
Make it more difficult with your own wife.
What?
With your own wife who's a nida.
Let's say with your own wife. Great, right? Somebody comes and says, I want you to go live with your wife who is Anita, and I want you to be intimate with her. Something you're not allowed to do. Would we have an expectation, Yaharig Va'al Yavar, for that? What?
No.
That's a suffix in the Menchas Chinuch, and it's based on this. It depends. Is this category of Nida considered to be part of the overall category of Gilei Arayos? Or would you say no? In some ways, it shares the characteristics of Gilei Arayos, and in so many other ways, it doesn't. Kiddushin is Tofes. The child that one has with a Nida is not considered a Mamzer. So maybe, therefore, we would say that that follows that it's also not considered to be Gilei Arayos with regard to giving up my life.
It does have a different category.
That what?
A Ben Nida.
Right, so it's different. Why do I bring this all up? Again, this is totally out of the chomer here. The reason why I bring it up is because it's relevant to this. What is the general halacha? I come in and I say, I believe that this meat is kosher. Somebody brings me a plate of meat, and I say, no, I watched them cook it. I saw where they bought it from. The meat is kosher. Am I believed to say that?
Yeah.
Why not? Edechanan bisurin. When we're talking about kashrus, when we're talking about iser v'heter. So I believe one person is believed. What if I come in and I say, I want everyone to know that I was there when this couple got married, and I know that this woman is an Eishes Ish. Am I believed to say that?
No.
No, why not? Ein davar sheva erba pachas mishnayim. When we're talking about arayos, when you're making some claim that the implication is going to be something having to do with Gilei Arayos, something having to do with very serious matters, then one person on his own does not believe. You need Al pishnei edim or al pishlosha edim yakum davar. You need to have two edim that are going to stand up and testify that this is the reality. One witness alone is not going to be good enough. Okay, what's the story with Anita? What's the story with Anita? A woman says, I went to the mikveh. She believed?
Yeah.
Yes, why she believed? Really? Is it? Is this the same as Isser v'heter? Is that the same as Kashrus? Or is this the same as Gilei Arayos? Does this go into the category of, if I get up and I say, I know this woman is an Eishes Ish, and therefore she's not allowed to be married to someone else, and the implications of that is she's going to be chayv skila and a terrible thing, whatever. I'm not believed to say such a thing. I'm only one witness. We need two edim. Maybe you should say Anita's the same. After all, it is Gilei Arayos. Shulchan Aruch discusses, what's the halacha if a person is a medical professional, and he wants to treat his wife, and his wife is critically sick? Is he allowed to treat her when she's Anita or not? What's the halacha? Big discussion in Shulchan Aruch. So, if her life is really in danger, it's one thing. But let's say not. He's a dentist, right? He's a dentist. If his wife doesn't get the treatment right now, okay, she'll survive. Unless it's a major infection, something else. What's the halacha? Is he allowed to treat his wife or not? So, big discussion. It depends. How do you look at Anita? Is Anita considered to be real Gilei Arayos? If it's real Gilei Arayos, then you have to be willing to give up your life. She has to be willing to give up her life. How can she violate the Isser Nida? So this is a major, major discussion that has many implications, but to this discussion, I think it was a very important hakdama, it's a very important introduction. So let's look at this Gemara in Maseches Ksubos, Daf Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, where the Gemara tells us that Amar Rab Chinana Bar Kahana Amar Shmuel, Minayin L'Nida Shosoferes La'atzma, how do we know that a Nida is believed to count the Shiva Nekiyim on her own? Maybe we should say, this is like a Davar Sheva Erva. Why is it a davar sheva erva? Because we're talking about a woman who, if you do the wrong thing and you live with this woman at a time when you're not allowed to, it's a chiyuv kares. So maybe that should be in the general category of arayos, like the Rambam says. Anyone who has a chiyuv kares when you live with them is automatically included in Gilei Arayos. Therefore, says the Gemara, no, we have a pasuk that says v'safer la shivas yamim, and from there we learn la liatzma. The woman counts for herself, and there is no requirement of having to wait him. It would seem to be a very clear indication from the Gemara that this is different than Gilei Arayos. It's very clear. It's very obvious. Which again, as we said, there are conflicting Gemaras, conflicting halachos in many different ways. And therefore the Gemara says, so what happens if somebody is on a business trip and when he left his home, his wife was Anita. Now he comes back and his wife says, by the way, I went to the mikvah. He has a right to believe her? Says the Gemara, yes. Of course he has a right to believe her. He has a right to assume that she did everything properly, and that is learned from the pasuk of V'safra La. Okay, Shulchan Aruch says, what are you giving the strange case? A guy goes on a business trip. When he left, his wife was Anita. She comes back, says the Shulchan Aruch, what about a regular case? A guy's home, he's in going on a trip. And his wife is living in his house, and they have a wonderful relationship. The problem is she's Anita. She comes home one night and says, by the way, I just finished the Shiva Nekiyim. I just went to the mikvah, and now we're allowed to be together again. Is he allowed to believe her? Says the Shulchan Aruch, yes. However, the Shulchan Aruch says one should be makbid that when his wife comes back from the mikvah, she should actually verbalize. She should say tavalti. She should say, "I want you to know, I went to the mikvah. I'm believed to say I went to the mikvah because even though I should have said it's a davar she'be'erav and it requires two edim, the Torah says v'safrala. The Torah says I'm allowed to keep the count on my own, which means I'm allowed to be believed when I tell you tavalti. But based on that, the Shulchan Aruch says that really the proper thing to do is whenever a woman goes to the mikvah and now becomes tahora, she should really return home and say explicitly to her husband, tavalti. Now the Aruch HaShulchan says, she doesn't have to say to him, tavalti. You don't have to actually get up and give a whole speech. I want you to know, I counted the Shivan Akiyim. It started on this day, ended on that day. I went to the mikvah tonight, and this was the mikvah woman, and this is where I went. And you don't have to go through the speech. It's good enough if the woman does something to show that she's no longer in Nida status. So while she was in Nida, she wasn't touching her husband. She walks into the room, and she does something to show. She gives her husband a kiss. Obviously, she wouldn't do that while she was in Nida. From the fact that she's doing it, it means, obviously, that now she is no longer in Nida. Let's see the Aruch HaShulchan here together. Number three, the Aruch HaShulchan says as follows. V'yirali, delav davka bo meres b'fia tavalti. I don't have to explicitly say, I went to the mikvah and give all the details. Ela, afilu hiyosa davar shemiramezes lo tvilasa, kigon shenosenes lo chayfetz miyada liyado. For example, while a woman is in Nida, we have her chakos. She's not allowed to pass things directly to her husband. So now she comes home from the mikvah and she says, "Hi, honey, can you take my bag?" He says, "Oh, I want to take your bag. Yeah, you're in Nida, I can't." Which shouldn't be his reaction ever. It's never appropriate. Okay, so he starts getting all nervous. She says, "Well, why do you think I'd be handing you my bag?" Of course, during the time of the month when I'm not allowed to hand you the bag, I don't. But tonight, I'm handing you the bag. Nu, get the message. So obviously, the Aruch HaShulchan says that would be good enough and there would be no reason to do anything more. There's a very fascinating chiddush in the Pischei Tshuva here in Shulchan Aruch. Pischei Tshuva writes, what if you have we have such a concept in halacha as somebody who can lose their cheskas kashrus, right? Somebody who's chashad al adavar, somebody who has no trust because they broke their trust in this area, is not going to be trusted moving forward until they do something to show us that they should be trusted again, until they regain the trust of the public or those who are relying on them. So say, for example, you have somebody who cheated in business and goes to jail and pleaded guilty and didn't even deny it. It's clear as day that this person is a crook, right? Let's say. There's no denying. So that happens. And now that person, you know, stands up in a court and says, "I'd like to testify about somebody else. I saw them stealing money." You're testifying. You think the court is going to accept your... I don't know how it works. How does it work?
He's an expert.
What? He's an expert. So, what? No, so in halacha we say that hachashad al adavar, maybe that was a bad example, but if somebody is not trustworthy in this area, then you can't be trusted. So say, for example, here's a great example. You lose your credibility. I don't know if it works legally that way also. I assume it should. Let's say, for example, you have a restaurant owner here in the Five Towns who doesn't keep kosher in his house. So he's going to say, "You can trust me. What do you mean? I'm in my own house. I don't eat kosher because I'm not from. But of course, I have respect for the community. You think I'm going to serve people non-kosher food?" So he is an upstanding person. There's no reason we shouldn't believe him. And in every other area of his life, we would believe him. And I would give him my credit card to go buy me something from the store, and I wouldn't think he's going to run off with it. But when it comes to serving kosher food, so this is an area of life that he's not so careful about. So if he's not careful about it, how can we trust him and give him credibility when all of us depend on it? So we have such a concept in halacha. So the Pischei Tshuva says, what happens if you have a woman who is not careful about Hilchos Nida before she's married? So for example, the Pischei Tshuva says, you have a woman who's on a college campus, which didn't exist in those days, but he says you have someone who's on a college campus, and we all know what goes on there. And unfortunately, she never went to the mikveh, and she's having all kinds of intimate relationships with other people there, with other men. So would you say that therefore when that woman gets married, maybe she doesn't have an emunus. Maybe when she gets married, she's not allowed to say to her husband, "By the way, the Torah says v'safar la, the Torah says I'm believed, and therefore I counted Shivan Akiyim and I went to the mikvah, and now I'm allowed to come back." The husband says, "What do you mean you're believed? How can you be believed? I know what you did in college. I know what you were up to. You lost your emunus." So Pischei Tshuva says that's not reasonable to say that. Why? What do you mean? Why is that different than the store owner who doesn't keep kosher and now we're wondering whether or not we should trust him that he's serving kosher food in the store? What's the difference? What?
She did tshuva.
Why do you assume she did tshuva?
Well, if she didn't do tshuva, she still
So that's a very good question. So there's actually an interesting issue. If we really believe that tshuva works, right? So the Acharonim have this discussion. Rabbi Yehuda, I think, others. If we really believe that tshuva is so powerful, and you hear all the drushas, or maybe you're sleeping through the drushas, Rosh Hashanah time, talking about tshuva, everyone should do tshuva. It's wonderful, right? It's great, and it's ki'ilu, like, you know, like you're reborn, you know, everything's starting over, your relationship is like nothing ever happened. It's great, beautiful. If that's the case, the Acharonim asks, then why do we ever give someone Mises Bezdin? Torah says, you violate Shabbos, we're going to kill you. Why? What is it? Excuse me, I did. How about tshuva? I was at Yeshava Shuva Drasha. I heard you said that, like Rabbi Axelrod spoke this year, Mishana Shmo, I'm like a new person, like I never existed. What do you mean you're going to kill me? Bezdin's going to put me on trial? I did tshuva already. What's the problem? So why do we ever kill someone?
Kapara.
What? Kapara. It's not just kapara. The Acharonim say it's more than that. It's not just that tshuva's not enough. It's more than that. Let's say I did the most halakha tshuva. It doesn't matter. The Acharonim say, the Torah says, we have a system. It can't work this way. We don't really know whether someone did tshuva, they didn't do tshuva. It's very hard to determine. Torah says, if this is what you do, this is your punishment. If we can't determine that you did that, then you won't be punished. But if we determine that you're Mechala Shabbos and you were bemazed and you did something wrong, tshuva is between you and God. But what we're supposed to do, we have to follow the rules. And God said, this is the punishment, this is what you get, this is what you have to do. So what are you going to say here? We assume that just because a woman got married, all of a sudden she's a balas tshuva? No. So what's the heter? Why should a husband believe his wife when he knows that his wife had a previous history when she was in college? Oh, so that's a different problem. It's a different problem. If they don't trust each other, it's a different issue. But fundamentally, let's try to think. What's the issue? What?
Maybe she changes that.
Oh, you're on to something. What's the status changing?
Maybe has a different perspective.
Maybe she has a different perspective. Yeah, what do you say?
Restaurant owners became from and started keeping kosher in his home, then he doesn't get back his nehmanis for his restaurant.
He does. But that's because there was a change in the problem that was the original root of the problem. So the restaurant owner was not believed because he didn't keep kosher. Now he keeps kosher. Should we believe him?
So if the woman gets married and now she's married to one person, and then that's it.
But that's exactly the question. How do we know that she's changed her way? The answer is, the Pesach Teshuva says, because the only reason she did it before is because she was a balas taiva. She had no other way out. Now she's married to her husband. Why would we assume that a woman who's married to her husband, who has the ability to be intimate with him, who has the ability to find this pleasure in her life without doing all kinds of other things, when she was in college, she was immature, she had no other way, she couldn't go to the mikvah, whatever it is. Now, we have no reason to assume that she doesn't have a cheskas kashrus. That's not called losing it. That's a very different circumstance than it was now. And the Pesach Teshuva says it's similar to the case you're saying, that if he starts to keep kosher in his home, then he is going to be neman. It's the same over here. Now she's married to a man. And she's, when we say kiddushin, what does it mean to be mekadesh? To separate. What does it mean to separate? You're separate from everyone else. Hare ad mekudeshes li means you are singled out for me and not for anyone else. That's what it means to be separated. So we assume the woman now separated herself. She's no longer involved in all this activity, and now she's nemenis again. Now she's believed. And that is why Rabbi Avadi actually writes as the halacha that we have a right to assume that the woman has a cheskas kashrus, even if we know that she had a past. And this is very, very troubling, because not troubling, but it's a troubling phenomenon that we see today. There are many people who, when they get engaged, are not careful about harchakas, do all kinds of things. I was involved with a couple recently who really did very terrible things during their engagement. And not just that they were in Shomer Negiah, which is obviously an Isser, but also that they went a lot further than that. And the question is, so now they get married, and why is there any reason to believe that they're going to be okay? In fact, this Chassan came to me, and he felt so guilty, and he felt so horrible right before he got married. And he said, am I ever going to be able to keep Hilchos Nida when I can't even control myself when I'm engaged? And the answer is, the Gemara has a concept of pas pasalo. Yes, once you're married, we assume that you're going to get yourself under control, hopefully. Look, if you prove that you can't, so then it's different. But it's a different stage of life, and that's why this is a very important heter that the Pesach Teshuva talks about. Unfortunately, it's very relevant today, which is why my father has said many times that we know that when a couple gets engaged, we conventionally refer to them as a chasan v'kala. And my father said that there were those who objected to that. When you get engaged, you're nothing. It's not like in the times of the Gemara. In the times of the Gemara, when they got engaged, something actually happened. He said, Arei mekudeshesli, they were engaged for a year. Then, a year later, they got actually married, they did the Nisuin, and they moved into a home together. But for that interim period in that year, they weren't allowed to She wasn't allowed to be going out with any other boys. She was singled out to this boy already from a year ago. And she was on hold for them to get married when they're ready to do so. Today, we get engaged. What's the engagement? Halachically, really nothing. The engagement is just, okay, they made a commitment to each other. But there's no real halachic change in status that happens as a result of the fact that they announced they're getting engaged. So now we start calling them chasam and kala. So I think my father quotes from Rav Soloveitchik or maybe others that he objected to that. How can you call yourself chasam and kala? Once you start calling yourself that, you feel, oh, we're already husband and wife, we're already so close to each other. Now we can break this rule, now we can break that rule. How many chasam and kalas do we know that are not careful about hilchus yichud? They're not careful about so many different things, and that's where the problems come in. All of these issues wouldn't happen if they were makbid on hilchus yichud the way they're supposed to. But as a result of the fact that they start calling themselves chasam and kala, they start feeling our status is changing, it has changed already. So it starts breaking down the barriers, and therefore, as a result of that, things happen. So what happens when things happen? So the answer is, the Pesachei Tshuva says, we can assume that when they get married, they're going to be erlich, they're going to have Yiras Shamayim, and they're going to do the right thing. Aye, the status didn't change. The answer is, the status did change. It's the same as the store owner who says, now I'm keeping kosher, so now we're going to keep Taras HaMishpacha because we got married. Aye, before you got married, you didn't? The answer is, yeah, I was in a situation where it was very difficult, it was very complicated. Now, I have a very different set of circumstances that are presenting themselves. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a very important question. So last week we discussed the Shiloh, that a very, very unfortunate and tragic Shiloh. What happens when you have a woman who confesses to her husband, who says that, I have not been going to the mikvah, we've been married for 2-3 years, and I just want you to know, every time I told you I was going out of the house, I really wasn't going to the mikvah, it's disgusting, it's not something I want to do, it's not something I want to be involved with. How do you ever get an emunah back? That's a very serious question. First of all, the question that you need to ask before that is, does a husband have an obligation to believe his wife when she says that? Or can he say, you know, maybe she's joking around with me? That's something we're going to have to get into in a few minutes if we have time. If not, we'll do it next time. But the first fundamental question you need to ask is, does a husband always have to accept his wife's words when she says that? That's question number one.
Does that admission change her status?
It should, right? So it should change her status if she admits. The problem is, the Rama and others say he doesn't have to believe her because he can say, what? Other concepts that get in the way that he has to say. However, other Achronim say, once I'll get to your question, other Achronim say, what do you mean? He doesn't not trust her. He didn't change all of his email passwords, and he didn't change his password to the bank, and they're sharing all the accounts, and everything's staying the same. So he does trust her. So if he trusts her for everything else, then why is it that all of a sudden we're going to say magically, oh, you know what, don't trust her for this because the Rama says don't trust her. No. The assumption is, when a woman comes and says, I want you to know I've been involved in a scandal for the last 5 years and you had no idea, I lose all my trust in her. And I change the bank accounts and I change the password. And as a result of that, I say, I don't trust her for this either. Right? If I lost all my trust, then I don't trust her for this either. That's when the Rama says that. But if a husband actually does trust his wife for everything else, that's where the fundamental question gets in. You had a question?
In both cases, you know, yesterday and today, she didn't necessarily lie. I mean, you're believing her that she's telling you the truth. I didn't go. She's telling you the truth. I didn't go for the last 3 years to the mikvah.
Right.
But I'm going to go now. Why? You can believe her that she didn't go. You believe her that she's going to start. She didn't have to tell you anything.
Right.
And the case with, you know, today, she didn't lie that, maybe she didn't lie while she did in college.
Right.
And she's not going to lie now that she's...
So that's the question. What exactly are the standards for a person to regain their ne'emanus? Let me... If you believe her this way, then you have to believe her the other way also. Yes, it's true. So let's just see. The Yerushalmi in Maseches Ksubas. Let's look here, number 4. The Yerushalmi writes in Maseches Ksubas that Shmuel, boy is dakuke le'itze. Shmuel wanted to be intimate with his wife. And he comes into the bedroom that night, Amar Lei, and his wife says, oh, I'm sorry, I understand. You're making it very clear that you'd like to be together with me. However, I want you to know, Tameyani, I'm sorry, I'm Anida. Lamachar Amalei, the next morning, they woke up, and he's getting ready to go out for the day, and she says, by the way, Tohorani. He says, what do you mean, what happened? Last night, when we got into the room, you told me you were Tmeya. All of a sudden, you're Tohor. She says, oh, I wasn't Tmeya. What do you mean? Amalei, she says, I had such a hard day at work yesterday, and the kids came home, the whole house was upside down, I was so exhausted, I didn't have any energy left. So I said, Tmeya, I just wanted you to get away from me. I know that you're going to respect the halacha, so I didn't want to be with you. So I said, Tmeya. But of course it's not true. It's really that I'm Tahora. Yom Adin Tahora, Amar Lei, Lahavya Bechele Havi Shaita. That time, I just wasn't up to it. I wasn't feeling well, and I didn't feel I had the energy. So he went to Rav, and he asked his Rebbe, Rav, what am I supposed to do? My wife told me last night she's Tmeya. She tells me today she's Tahora. So which one do I believe? So he said, Amar Lei, Mikivan Shehivia Masla Devareha Ne'emena. Since she gave you a reason, she didn't just get up one day and decide to start lying to you. She said, I was exhausted, I had a very difficult day, and the kids came home, and the house was upside down, it was a big problem, and I wasn't feeling well. So she gave a reason why she said Tamea. She didn't just wake up one day and say Tamea and then change her mind. She said Tamea for a very good reason. So since she explained herself, therefore you have a right to believe her when she said Tamea that it wasn't real, it was just that she was trying to make sure that she wouldn't be too exhausted and have to stay up with you. Fine. Then the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubas Daf Chaf Beis on the bottom, Ba'i Minei Shmuel Mei Rav. Same story. Shmuel asked Rav, Amra Tameani V'chazara Amra Tahorani. So here in the Bavli, you don't get the backstory. It doesn't say that it was Shmuel's own wife who said one night Tameya and then she woke up Tahora. So the Bavli just gives us the Kitzur version. So it says, Shmuel shows up to him in the Beis Medrash one day and he says, Rav, I have a question. I'd like to know, if a woman says Tameya and then the next morning she says Tahora, what's the halacha? So he said, Amalei af pazu im nasna masal edvarea ne'amenas. If she gave a good reason why the night before she said Tameya, then you have a right to believe her. So she says, I was exhausted, hard day at work, I have too much to do, I want to go to sleep. So then it makes sense. Fine. Tana minei arboim zimnin. Rav told him 40 times. Arboim zimnin is a lot of times. He said, your wife is believed. Your wife is believed. What does it mean your wife is believed? That means her status is?
Tahora.
Your wife is believed. 40 times he keeps telling him, and he sees that Shmuel is just not getting it. He keeps saying, your wife is believed, she's Tahora. And Shmuel is giving him this, you know, this blank face. He keeps telling him 40 times, Tahora. Afilu hachi lo avad Shmuel uvde benafshe. Shmuel said, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not relying on it. My wife said Tameya, means she needs to go to the mikveh. If she didn't go to the mikveh, I'm not going to be with her. Now, it's an interesting end of the story. The Yerushalmi doesn't say that. The Yerushalmi says one version, the Bavli says a different version. But this is the story as it is quoted in the Bavli. So, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that a woman who says that she is Anida and then later changes her mind, but she gives a good explanation as to why she said the first statement and why she changed her mind now, that is something that she is believed to say. Aye, what do you do about this Gemara with Shmuel? Why didn't he listen? So he wanted to be Machmir. So the question is, does a husband even have a right to be Machmir? Who says he has a right? If he has an obligation of Ona to his wife, so then who said he has a right to be Machmir? So that's a big discussion in the Achronim, that who said that it's fair if a woman gives a good explanation, and the Gemara says that Rav Paskin, that she's Ne'emenes with that good explanation, so who are you to say, I'm not going to trust her and I'm going to make her go to the mikveh? Why? Why are you doing that? So that's a big question on the Gemara. You have to figure out what to do with that. But the Shach says, for a woman to say, oh, by the way, I was just kidding last night, that's not a good enough explanation. Shach says that's not good enough. It has to be something. You have to understand that this is not an issue that we joke around about. And therefore, if a woman says Tameyani, and then the next morning she says, oh, you know, I was just trying to make a joke, that's not a good enough explanation. It has to be something where she says a reasonable explanation as to why it is that she said what she said. Now, the Rama says, what happens if the couple was in a fight? They were in a fight the night before. Is that a good enough explanation, says the Rama? Yeah, the fight is a good enough reason. She doesn't have to say anything more. Of course, the reason why she said Tameya is because right now you're fighting with each other. Right now you don't want to talk to each other. Right now she's not interested. And the last thing she wants is that she should sleep with you. So she says, Tameyani, get away from me. I don't want to hear from you tonight. Go sleep on the couch. So as a result of that, the Rama says that would be, it's amazing. In the days of the Rama, the same things happen as a few hundred years later. So the Rama says that if that is the reason why she said Tameyani, then that would be sufficient. However, Shulchan Aruch says, although a woman is believed when she says Tameyani and then retracts the next day and says Tahora with an Amasla, and Amasla means she gives a very good, plausible excuse, a good explanation as to why it is that she said Tameya the night before. Although that is true, the Halacha is, says the Shulchan Aruch, that if she did something to show that she's reinforcing her original claim, then she's not Ne'emenes to say Tahora. For example, Shulchan Aruch says, and this is not relevant to us today because we don't have this, but you'll see how it's relevant in a second if we change the case. Shulchan Aruch says, let's say she put on big day nidus. So it used to be, when a woman was a nida, since they used to be makbid on Tumah V'Tahara, so when a woman was a nida, she wore a different set of clothing that everyone should know that this woman right now is Tmeya, and that means that I shouldn't come in contact with her, otherwise I can't go to the Beis HaMikdash, otherwise I have to go to the Mikvah, otherwise this bed is Tmeya, all different things. So again, this is not the way we act today. If a woman doesn't have one set of clothing for when she's in Nida, one set of clothing when she's not, everybody wears the same clothing all the time, and we don't structure it based on the time of the month that it is. So there, the Shulchan Aruch says, if a woman says Tmeya Ani, then that night they go out to a wedding after she says Tmeya Ani, and she puts on the gown that she wears only when she's in Nida. Or they go out for dinner and she decides she's going to put on the clothing that make it clear to everybody that she's in Nida. In that case, she's not believed the next morning to say, oh, by the way, I was just kidding last night, and when I said Tmeya, I didn't really mean it. Really, I'm Tahora. Why? Why should that be different? So the Rashba says the reason why is because when she does something substantive to back up her claim, then she's solidifying the claim that she made. And she can't just backtrack now and say, oh, I didn't really mean it. It wasn't really serious. That would be something that is not a legitimate answer to give after what you've done. You didn't just say Tmeya Ani. You went out of the house in these clothing and you proved that this is something that's very serious to you that you really believe. It's not good enough to backtrack the next day and just say Tahora. That would be insufficient. That is the way the Rashba explains it. The Maharal explains, no, it's not because she solidified her actions, but rather, he says, once it became known to the public, it's not just, oh, we're having a conversation, banter back and forth, I said this and that, I meant it, I didn't mean it. No. Once I'm going out in the public, it means everybody knows. Now, once everybody knows, how do you take that back? The genie's out of the bottle. So now, you went outside last night to the wedding in your big day nidus. Tonight, you're going to go out. You know, when we go out for lunch today, you're going to wear your regular clothing. You're going to show that I'm Tahora. So how can it be? Everyone's going to say, oh, one second. Last night, we saw them at the wedding together. We saw they weren't touching each other. We saw that they were wearing these clothing. All of a sudden, now, the next afternoon, she couldn't have gone to the mikvah in between. I'm the mikvah lady. I know she didn't show up. So what's going on here? So you went out in public and you told everybody, basically, by what you did, you told everybody you're Tmeya, the genie's out of the bottle. You're going to have to fix that by actually treating yourself as a Nida, and there's no way to reverse that without going to the mikvah. Those are the two explanations given by the different Mefarshim to explain why the Shulchan Aruch's Psak is binding, that if a woman says Tmeya and then does something to solidify her action by going out in public and showing everyone that that's what she believes, that would be something that would not be able to allow her to then retract what she had said. So, let's say, for example, what's the halacha if a woman doesn't go out in public, but rather if a woman tells her husband Tmeya Ani? Okay, what's the protocol when she's Tmeya? They sleep in separate beds. So she separates the beds. She goes into the bedroom, separates the beds. Now, nobody else is in your room. Nobody else is looking what's going on. So would that be something that would preclude her the next morning from saying Tahora Ani? Is that enough?
An action, she solidified it.
So it depends. If you believe the reason why is because of the Rashba. The Rashba says the reason why she's not Nehemenes the next day is because she did something to solidify the words that she said. Then over here, she did some action to solidify the words that she said. She separated the beds. And that would be enough to say she's no longer Nehemenes the next morning to say Tahora Ani. However, if you believe that the reason for the Shulchan Aruch's Psak is based on the Maharal, which is that because she went out in public and she publicized this matter, she can't put it back into the bottle anymore, then that's not relevant to our case. That would not be something that would be relevant to our situation. Yeah.
According to the Rashba, if she tells her husband Tmeya and she doesn't separate the bed, then what's going on? The husband's coming to her in bed,
right?
She says Tmeya, and she doesn't separate the bed.
Yeah, Sir Rabbi Avadia, I think, discusses that. Was that your question? That what? Yeah. Yeah.
She gives a reason the next morning. She says, yeah, I had to do the whole thing. But I was really just because I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say they separated beds. You can have two beds.
Okay, but the normal case, right? Yeah, it's like,
no, that's not action. It's no action.
What do you mean?
Not an action that she said, I'm unavailable.
I'm unavailable, and now what? Where should he go? To the couch?
She didn't do an action.
Uh-huh. That's talking like a real judge. Yes.
Is it a knas? Or is it a, you know, those what?
No, this is not a knas.
She's not a nida. Right? I mean, it's from a...
But we do have a halacha. We do have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Shavya anafshe chaticha di yisura. If let's say I walk into my house one day and I see this chicken on the table and I say, oh, I know that is treif. Okay, so don't eat it. It's your problem. Shavana, you decided that it's treif, so don't eat it. That's your problem. Is everyone else bound to that? Well, it depends. I don't know. It depends on the circumstances. My wife says, what do you mean? I'm the one who went to the store to buy it. I'm the one who cooked it. I'm the one who put it on the table. And I say it's kosher. And you say, well, I took one look at it and I can see that it's not. Fine, so don't eat it. It's your problem. For you, it's treif. For everybody else, it's kosher. So we do have such a thing as shavya anaf shechaticha de isura, which means I do have the ability to make something prohibited and off limits for myself. There is such a concept. What?
Not for anybody else.
Not for anybody else. So here, that's the question. How far do we take it? When she says tamei'ani, obviously that's going to have implications for her husband. But the Torah does say, v'safrala, the Torah does say that a woman has to keep track. So what do you mean the woman has to keep track? If the woman has to keep track, it means we do believe her in both directions. So that's the question here. How do we figure out the line between when we believe her and we say that that we take her word for it and therefore it changes her status, metaphysically? And when do we say, no, we believe her and she has a right to change the next morning because she obviously didn't mean to change her status at all? Yeah?
So